The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, providing NPR programs like Fresh Air, Here and Now, and many others for more than 32 years. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, September 12, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Fayetteville Film Festival launches today with a workshop for high school filmmakers and screenings of documentaries about school, Uncontrolled Variables, a science fair story directed by Dale Carpenter, and Leaving a Legacy, directed by Brenda Yelvington, about Fort Smith Northside High School's band directors. You can find the full schedule of events for the film festival that lasts through the week and a list of venues at FayettevilleFilmFest.org. Later on today's Ozarks at Large, a Sunday afternoon could include interacting with the church, having a cool adult beverage with friends, and helping an area nonprofit. This Sunday, you can do all four at once. We'll talk to some of the organizers of the Seven Hills Shelter Jam later this hour. First, firefighters and paramedics respond to often horrifying human tragedies. Now a study from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences wants to quantify the effects of these events over time on the men and women who experience them. Ann Kenda with Arkansas Public Media reports from Jonesboro, where she visited with a few first responders and spoke by phone with the study's author, Sarah Jones.
At Emerson Ambulance on East Nettleton, paramedic Steve Metcalf says it takes a lot to bother him. He's been at it 24 years, but there are times when the job is hard on his emotions, such as when a call to help a baby who is not breathing turns out to be sudden infant death syndrome.
It's probably when you lose the child that causes you the most, I don't know if you'd call it grief, but that would be when you have the most problem with it.
Not everyone is cut out for the work, but sometimes they have to have the experience to learn that about themselves.
They work two or three shifts and they quit because they can't deal with what they see. Because you can go through EMT school and paramedic school and never see anything bad. And then your first shift on, you get a small child or a burn victim or something that is just really hard to deal with.
What's really hard to deal with might be post-traumatic stress disorder, a psychological condition that's more than just a bad memory. It comes about when someone experiences or witnesses a violent or traumatic event and has trouble moving past it. They may relive the moment again and again. The effects of PTSD on first responders is being studied by researcher Sarah Jones at UAMS.
The big thing that keeps showing up is don't show weakness. You can't show weakness. You'll be looked at differently, not only, you know, as a person, but as someone you're running into a fire with.
Part of the survey seeks to find out if there's a stigma associated with first responders who appear to need some help themselves for psychological trauma.
Let's talk about barriers and facilitators to help seeking. What is it about the culture of the fire and EMS service that stops you or others from wanting to seek help for these issues?
The survey is ongoing, but so far Jones has found that one in four first responders has moderate to major depression, which can involve abrupt changes in personality, trouble solving simple problems, or a lack of self-care. There are also problems with insomnia, nightmares, and anxiety.
It's always been a suck-up, buttercup type thing. If you show any kind of a weakness, you're ostracized and you're thought less of in the male-dominated profession that it is, unfortunately.
That's recently retired firefighter and EMT Tim Grimes. At the cabin he's constructing in Clarendon, he looks out over the lake on Dobbs Landing as he talks about the traumatic memories that are triggered at odd times, such as when a smell or sight reminds him of something he experienced on the job. He wouldn't grill out for 2 years after zipping fire victims into body bags, and he won't watch certain scenes in movies, even ones that are meant to be funny.
All I can think in my head is what I've got to do to fix that person. I can't enjoy the program. I can't focus on anything else. In my mind, if I see someone fall off of a balcony and strike their head, I'm thinking, okay, I got to stabilize the spine. I've got to do this. And that's kind of weird. You know, when you sit down and think about it, everybody else is laughing, having a good time, and you can't do it.
More than 200 first responders across Arkansas answered Jones' survey, and a few dozen were willing to speak on the phone for a more extensive description of their experiences. Jones hopes to expand the study, create a toolkit for first responders who need help, and have the research affect policy in the future. I'm Ann Kenda with Arkansas Public Media.
Arkansas Public Media is a journalism collaborative that includes Arkansas's public radio stations. You can find out more at Arkansas Public Media's Facebook page. A switch now to magic. Victorian-era illusionist and spiritualist Sean Paul and partner Juliana Fay, who operate Intrigue Theater in Eureka Springs, along with their monkey Frankie, will be featured performers on Penn & Teller Fool Us Reality Show, which is scheduled to air Thursday night on the CW.
Well, it's been quite a night here on Fool Us. Two acts have managed to fool the nearly unfoolable Penn & Teller. Can we make it three? Let's meet our next contender and find out.
Sean Paul says all three of them traveled to Las Vegas by car last spring to perform their act for Penn & Teller.
We went out there. The place was packed. There was Penn & Teller. Penn kind of had his arms folded in front of him in a kind of a very skeptical manner. And Frankie's eyes got really big. And we set him down on the table, and he was locked and loaded and ready to go, and he didn't miss a beat. We didn't have to reshoot anything. And by the time it got time for Penn & Teller to tell us whether or not they figured it out, I didn't care. I was just so pleased as to how well it went. And so I can't say whether or not we fooled them, but what I will say is as we walked off the stage, I looked back at Teller, and he had a huge smile, and he gave me two big thumbs up.
On their program, Penn and Teller observe both professional and would-be magicians perform sleight of hand or grand illusions. If those magicians manage to trick the famous duo, they win a trip to Las Vegas to perform as Penn and Teller's opening act at the Rio Hotel and Casino, where all the Fool Us tapings take place. Sean Paul says their appearance on the national show provided them a major promotional opportunity.
They give you a full minute as a bio package before you start your act, as far as who you are, where you're from, and what you do. And I wanted to use this as an opportunity to really promote our show in Eureka Springs.
Sean Paul and Juliana Fay perform regularly at Intrigue Theater in Eureka Springs. You can find out more at intriguetheater.com. This week, John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, sat down for his usual week in the rearview mirror conversation with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics. But as the past 2 years have proven, no political conversation is a usual conversation anymore. This week, they covered the latest in the fallout from investigations into members of Arkansas state legislature, DACA, the great stadium debate, and that pretty unconventional meeting between the president and top Washington, D.C. Democrats.
So we do have Congress returning to its normal functions of being in session here. And one of the big stories of the week is Donald Trump, maybe the Republican president, has decided he's going to work with the Democrats now. How surprising is this? And what do you think the fallout has been?
You know, in a way, it's not surprising because it is totally, it is unpredicted. It is bizarre. It's wholly unconventional. And so that's sort of common Trump behavior. What I think the fallout would be, it remains to be seen. I think it's a one-time thing. I think Trump's attention span is about 12 hours. And I think at its outside. And I think this is... I think he made, in this case, there was a confluence of factors that worked, he thought. One, we can get the debt limit off the table. I can look better than Obama, who always had trouble getting the debt ceiling done. We can get that done. George W. had trouble with Katrina and Sandy, the Republicans look bad. We're going to do this one. We're going to do this one efficiently. So that what Schumer and Pelosi, his new best friends of the last couple of days, offered was a way to do all that. With the confluence of one other factor, he could really stick it to the Republicans who failed him on health care and who have been talking bad about him in the press. So all of those things together made a magic opportunity for him to do something that, in a bipartisan spirit, would be good, but was also motivated by his usual negative egomania and spite, and probably is a one-time happenstance.
Do you think he's pushing to try to get Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell ousted from leadership by cutting this type of deal, and on top of the abuse that he heaped on them for several weeks there, to show that they're ineffective as leaders of the Republican majorities?
I don't know that he thinks that strategically in a long term. I think he thinks in the moment in terms of ego gratification and getting good press. But I do suspect, based on the news that broke during the week, that at least he had had a moment in which he had said to somebody, because the thing had legs there for a little bit, that you know, maybe we could run Newt or Santorum and get them in as Speaker of the House. I mean, I think that he'd love that. I'm not sure. I just am not prepared to assign that kind of linear strategic thinking to what he's doing. I think the telling thing about this is that the morning after he made this deal with Nancy and Chuck, he's on the phone crowing to Nancy about the great press they're getting. I think that's what it's about with him. How am I going to look in the moment on this?
Let's talk about his DACA decision there. It's obviously caught a tremendous amount of uproar. He's given Congress 6 months to fix this problem. Then he kind of backtracks a little bit off of that, says he's
12-hour attention span.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, do you think that at the end of the day, it's a whole bunch of needless working people up into a frenzy to further create chaos in order for the status quo to probably eventually be the final decision? Or do you think there's a chance to do something bigger?
Robert, you ask very good questions. And you're asking conventional questions at an unconventional time. And I mean, the idea, it is defensible, it is credible that you would say, this was an executive order that I think is probably unconstitutional and is going to be challenged, and it ought to be addressed by Congress, and we're going to give Congress 6 months to do it. That makes sense. But then he got bad press about it during that day, and by the evening he's tweeting, if they don't act, I'll revisit, and he's sending out reassurances. So who knows?
Turning our attention to state politics here, State Senator Jim Hendren, likely the next leader of the state Senate, majority leader at this point in time, issues a pretty detailed statement about how they are going to go forward with potential indictments by their members, asking them to step down from committeeships, basically, but obviously still respecting innocent until proven guilty. That's a pretty big development. He was feeling some pressure. Explain to people what has been going on maybe behind the scenes.
Well, for 2 or 3 years, and maybe into 4 years, we've had legislative and Arkansas political establishment fretting about federal investigation of legislative actions regarding the use of the General Improvement Fund and maybe some behavioral health funding. And people have been saying somebody's going to get indicted, and we've had two indicted. We've had some publicity about Senator Jake Files, who Fort Smith, who has not been charged with anything, let's be clear, but who seems to have had some business difficulty, and there's some curiosities.
And the FBI's investigating.
He has admitted the FBI's come to see him. And there continues to be this pall cast over the whole legislative culture that we've had a couple of little flip-flops drop, but big shoes are going to drop. The Democratic Party called on Files to resign, which was absurd. He had no reason for him to resign without indictment, much less conviction. But absent a conviction, what would the House, what would the Senate Republican caucus do if a member came under active indictment for corruption activities? Hendren and the Republican caucus, which is about two-thirds of the Senate, put out a statement basically saying you would relinquish all your leadership positions, and more than that, you couldn't sit on a committee, which I find odd, but it's you ask him, and Hendren, who had a quote in the paper today, more indictments are possible, or you may even have used the word likely. So the political pressure is growing. There is a lot of public disgust with what they read about some of these activities, and particularly among Republicans who want to show that they can run this state cleaner than was run before. It is important to them to try to get ahead of this to the extent that they can, and that's what's going on.
Let's talk a little bit about some Razorback football, because I know you love to tweet about Razorback football.
Did you follow my tweets last week?
I followed your tweet. I want to go back to week one. The Razorbacks in War Memorial Stadium playing Florida A&M, a pretty low crowd attendance of 36,000. I'm going to argue this. I don't think it's Little Rock's fault that there were that few people there, because it was a cupcake team, it was a Thursday night, and Little Rock fans go to Northwest Arkansas for the games, but I'm not sure how many Northwest Arkansas fans came to Little Rock to fill up that stadium.
It's not Little Rock's fault. It was a horrible game. There was a threat of monsoon that continued to infest. It was Thursday night. I was making fun of the crowd on Twitter, and a guy said, look, I would be there, but Thursday night is my nephew's junior high football. It was such a cultural change. Parking and tailgating were limited by the fact that it was a business day in Little Rock. No, it's not Little Rock's fault, but it's a good additional bit of supposed evidence for Fayetteville to use to take away the Little Rock games, which I think is a fait accompli, and probably, forgive me, I've been saying this for 20 years, makes sense, yeah. Ought to be so.
Well, the facilities difference is so different.
It has become
now.
So different. Yeah. The TV needs are and the whole experience have become different. So much money has been and is being invested in making that Razorback Stadium the place, and the money is so much different. Apparently, if I read Wally Hall correctly, the U of A could buy out the contract next year and still make out ahead by playing the game in Fayetteville. They're due one more. It's a conference game. I suspect that will be it. It will be a loss of a great tradition. Mm-hmm. And it will have a great amount of sadness, but it makes economic sense.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and he talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. There's much more from their conversation at talkbusiness.net. You can also read John Brummett's columns at arkansasonline.com.
On the next Fresh Air.
There's something happening. They're not reporting it. Katie, you're not reporting it, Katie.
That's not the only time Donald Trump called out Katie Turr at his rallies, leading the crowds to jeer her. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Turr about covering the Trump campaign for NBC and MSNBC. She's written a new memoir. Join us.
Fresh Air at 11 a.m. and again 6 p.m. every Monday through Friday on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Crew members from SWEPCO are driving east to help restore power in the wake of Hurricane Irma. 17 linemen, engineers, and other personnel left from Fayetteville, Greenwood, and Rogers yesterday to assist in a mutual network designed to allow companies to work with each other after major disasters. Another SWEPCO team returned to Arkansas this weekend after a similar operation following Hurricane Harvey. The National Institutes of Health is awarding $1.7 million to a researcher at the University of Arkansas to help develop methods to predict age-related delays in skin wound healing. Kyle Quinn, an assistant professor of biomedical engineering at the U of A, will use a type of multiphoton microscopy in his research. The multiphoton enables 3D imaging of skin metabolism and organization without the use of dyes. Non-healing wounds can be a major concern for older adults, and the normal act of aging can contribute to problems with healing. 1 week is left in Arkansas before a deadline for entities to apply for licenses to cultivate and dispense medical marijuana. A spokesman for the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration says as of yesterday, 27 applications for dispensaries have been received. That's five fewer than the 32 official expected to be approved, with more applicants expected in the coming days. 11 applications for cultivation facilities have been received, with five to be approved. Arkansas's Medical Marijuana Commission is to make final decisions this fall on who is granted licenses. There are 8 geographic regions in the state that will be considered so that the facilities may be evenly spaced throughout the state. Mercy's $247 million expansion plan will reach another milestone tomorrow when a new clinic in Pea Ridge is formally dedicated with a blessing and ribbon cutting. The 7,400-foot clinic will officially open to patients Thursday. The overall Mercy plan includes a total of 7 clinics in the region. Mercy Clinic Primary Care, Pea Ridge, will house 2 providers, a physician and nurse practitioner, and feature 14 examination rooms at 200 Carr Street. The Arkansas Department of Health reports the state's year-long outbreak of mumps is officially over. As Arkansas Public Media's Renee Goddard reports, the department's success is due in no small part to the equal effort put in by the communities that suffered the outbreak.
Last year, state health officials began tracking new cases of mumps with increasing alarm. By this summer, they were up to almost 3,000. It was the second biggest outbreak in the United States in the last 30 years. But the health department worked closely with communities affected by the outbreak to keep it under control. Dr. Dirk Haslow is the state's epidemiologist.
This outbreak got big enough where it became very difficult to get ahead of it. So we started to identify groups of people where we were seeing more infections and then offer vaccination clinics ahead of time to try to, to smother out the transmission. And that helped. But what helped more so was engaging the local community.
According to Haslow, mumps vaccines today can ward off the most severe outcomes, but not all mild cases.
This vaccine, people need to sort of change the way they think about this vaccine. It's not going to prevent all mild peritonitis. But where it pays off is it prevents serious problems like infertility, meningitis, encephalitis.
The number of infections in the state has returned to the baseline non-outbreak levels. A typical yearly case count is between 1 and 6. In Little Rock, I'm Renee Goddard, Arkansas Public Media.
And a new study suggests Arkansas is one of the unhappiest places in the country. A compilation of a variety of factors in the 2017 Happiness Index, developed by the website WalletHub.com, places Arkansas as the 46th happiest state, or the 5th unhappiest of all 50. The study weighed emotional and physical well-being, work environment, and community elements to reach a total score for each of the 50 states. Arkansas placed last in the physical and emotional well-being category and third worst in the rate of adult depression. Oklahoma's overall rank was even worse, next to last. Missouri was positioned just 3 spots higher than Arkansas. The happiest state in the country, Minnesota.
You listen to NPR News on KUAF because you trust the journalism that brings you more than the headlines. In times like these, this kind of reporting is essential, but it is also expensive. Your gift to KUAF helps pay for the news that is vital to all of us right now. And your support during the month of September helps us toward our fall fundraising goal of $150,000. Support KUAF and NPR News right now by making a gift online at supportkuaf.com.
Still to come on today's Ozarks, the militant grammarian takes on the big one. The Mount Everest of grammatical challenges.
I lay the book on the table every day when I come in. I laid the book on the table yesterday. I have laid the book on that table every day for a year.
Lay, lie, and the militant grammarian in the second half hour of today's Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Circle of Life Hospice knows that every day can be challenging when loved ones are coping with a life-limiting illness. Since 2000, Circle of Life Hospice has assisted thousands of patients and their families with these challenges. Help is available at 800-495-5511 or online, nwacircleoflife.org.
Licensed lay midwives in Arkansas are concerned about stricter rules proposed by the Arkansas Department of Health, rules which would further regulate the practice. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, both sides will face off at a public hearing scheduled later this month.
Pregnant women in Arkansas seeking a home birth with a licensed midwife must show they are medically fit to endure natural childbirth. The Arkansas Department of Health has maintained oversight of midwifery in Arkansas under the State Board of Health since 1987. Current agency rules require women to undergo 2 medical risk assessments with a qualified medical provider. If found to be at risk, midwives must relinquish care of their client, transferring care to a qualified family practitioner or obstetrician. Under new draft rules, pregnant women will have to submit to even more medical scrutiny, says Keisha Chiapanelli. She's an attorney and a member of the National Birth Rights Bar Association, representing Arkansas Birth Matters, a grassroots consumer group comprised of 1,500 members.
And now she'll be subject to an additional 3rd risk assessment.
Chiapanelli says women seeking a home birth often have difficulty finding an obstetrician or family practice doctor willing to conduct risk assessments, so end up at state-run public health clinics. She's also hearing from women claiming that the exams are invasive.
The rules actually state that the mother must submit to a vaginal exam, and that the only way that you can deviate and not have the exam is if the clinician makes that call. So the rules do mandate a vaginal exam and ignore the mother's right to make an informed decision to refuse that exam.
Arkansas Department of Health does provide informed refusal forms for midwives and clients to sign. Failing assessments, mothers, Chiappinelli says, often struggle to find an obstetrician or qualified family medical provider to deliver their babies, what's referred to as risked out.
Rather than let the trained, licensed midwife continue to care for mother, mother is now left without maternity care, and we feel that puts her in a very dangerous position and the baby in a very dangerous position.
A majority of states permit home birth after previous cesareans, but the Arkansas Department of Health bars licensed midwives from contracting with women who've previously undergone a surgical birth due to potential complications. One-third of all deliveries in Arkansas are surgical, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The midwifery advocacy group, Arkansas Birth Matters, points to a National Institutes of Health report issued 7 years ago stating concerns about barriers to natural labor after cesarean. The group says more states are allowing certified nurse midwives to deliver mothers who've previously delivered surgically. Licensed lay midwives are trained in prenatal labor delivery and postpartum care. Certified professional midwives, credentialed through the North American Registry of Midwives, offer a higher level of medical expertise, as do certified nurse midwives trained in dual disciplines. Lay midwives who have no license also deliver babies in Arkansas, but below regulatory radar. Keisha Chiappinelli argues licensed midwives are medically trained to know if a mother would be at risk for a home birth.
They have to show that they've received certain education and training, and they're held accountable to the public if something goes wrong. So I think at a certain point, you have to let the provider work autonomously and use the skill set that they have, just like with a regular obstetrician. Say a mom who's pregnant is in the care of an obstetrician, and something now changes in the pregnancy. That obstetrician determines whether or not mom should be transferred over to someone for a higher level of care. So now mom needs to go to a specialist. Midwives have the training and they have the education in order to make those determinations in conjunction with the mother.
28 licensed midwives operate in Arkansas, delivering several hundred babies a year, among more than 38,500 delivered in 2014 in hospitals and birthing centers. A public hearing on the private draft rules posted under the midwifery link on the Department of Health's website is set for September 21st at 10 a.m. in the Department of Health's auditorium on Markham Street in Little Rock. Written public comment addressed to the Women's Health Section Chief is welcome. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Sunday afternoon, you can mix a church, a bar, friends, and a cause. The church is First Christian Church in Fayetteville, and the bar is George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street. You select your friends, the cause, raising money and awareness for Seven Hills Homeless Center in Fayetteville. Sunday afternoon, the second annual Seven Hills Shelter Jam will bring the Ozark Howlers, Biggins, Los Pejos, and the Cape Brothers together to George's to play from about 1 to 6. Amy Blackman, the chair of outreach at First Christian Church, says her group seeks ways for a small church to make a big impact.
To really make a dent in what we feel like is a huge need at Seven Hills, we wanted to involve the community a lot more, both in raising awareness and in raising funds, obviously. So, throughout the year, our church outreach team does a lot in terms of, you know, providing food at Seven Hills, as well as community suppers over at Trinity United Methodist. We do, you know, Christmas outreach kind of projects, that kind of thing. This is just our one big kind of emphasis in the summer.
Organizers say they've made a few tweaks since last summer's inaugural event. Not quite as many bands, but longer sets. Again this year, the bands are donating their time, the bar, the space. Event sponsors have been recruited to help pay the minimal operating expenses. And Amy Blackman says the silent auction is gone.
Because that's more about coming and getting stuff for yourself. And we wanted to make the event more about giving. And, you know, you pay some money to get in, you have a good time, but then there'll be opportunities during the event to give a little bit more and buy a bag of groceries for someone or some medicine that they need for a chronic illness that otherwise is going to get worse.
Ryan Pfeiffer, the senior pastor at First Christian Church, says his congregation's connection to Seven Hills extends a community-mindedness that he thinks can be traced back to the church's founding in 1848.
The young minister who started that church was a big believer in local community causes, and in particular, education was his big thing. So he helped found the Arkansas College for Men and Women here in Fayetteville, which kind of helped set the stage later on for the University of Arkansas being land-grant university here. So there's been a deep connection with this community, with other congregations. We helped start Cooperative Emergency Outreach, Butterfield Trail Village Retirement Community. We are deeply involved with Seven Hills, have been since its beginning. Obviously, St. Paul's was the one that started that, but we kind of partnered with them a little bit later on. And the congregation just sees that as a natural tendency of who we are as a community, that we be involved in the broader community, and that's part of the fabric of who we are.
All proceeds from the door and commemorative T-shirt sales will be directed toward the Seven Hills Center and their services. Solomon Birchfield, the director of operations at Seven Hills, says like most nonprofits, Seven Hills' budget is lean. Money raised through the efforts like Sunday Afternoon Shelter Jam can help divert resources to other Seven Hills projects.
The day center really is designed to help meet the basic human needs of people. So we serve two meals a day there. We have a couple hundred people that receive their mail at Seven Hills. People take showers, wash clothes, use the food pantry, get new clothing. All of those basic human needs that you and I do at our house happens at Seven Hills on a daily basis. So we do always need supplies. You know, these cool early mornings we've had the last week remind you that the fall and winter season are upon us. So we do need tents and tarps and sleeping bags right now. Our food pantry, we just recently converted the food pantry to a client choice model. That's where an individual in need gets to come in and pick up a small shopping bag and select the items off the shelves that they can cook and that they like.
And he says there are many ways to help a program like Seven Hills. All are welcome and appreciated. He's glad there can be one like Sunday's event to help when he's asked, how can I help?
And usually the answer is, you know, you could host a food drive or you could host a supplies drive or come down and volunteer at the day center. But this is an opportunity to say, what I'm asking you to do is hang out with a couple friends, get a couple beers, listen to some fantastic music, and that's how you can help Seven Hills.
The second annual Seven Hills Shelter Jam, Sunday afternoon at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Doors open at 1. The final band, the Cape Brothers, scheduled to finish playing music around 6. Tickets are $10 and can be purchased at georgesmajesticlounge.com. We'll let Ryan Pfeiffer, senior pastor at First Christian Church, have the final word.
We're able to do what church communities need to do, which is give back to the community. And when we've already got a good organization like Seven Hills that's on the front lines, we love to support that and know that that lives are being changed because of the compassion that's being shared.
This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Hurricane Irma has left the Florida Peninsula, leaving flooding and wind damage in its wake.
It was noisy and nasty, and I've certainly never been through anything like it, and it lasts longer than you want it to last.
We'll have the latest on recovery efforts.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Later today from 1 to 3 on 91.3 KUAF. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, what makes a good story an entertaining story?
Truth. An experience that really touched you or changed you. And everybody has those. That's the best part.
The third season of the local storytelling group, That's What She Said, begins this weekend, and we'll have a preview of the tales we'll hear over the next few months. That's tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF and always at KUAF.com and OzarksAtLarge.com, as well as available as a free podcast through services like iTunes and Stitcher. The University of Arkansas men's golf team is bringing back the first-place trophy from the Gopher Invitational. Yesterday, Arkansas completed the tournament with a final round of 5-under to distance the Razorbacks from the rest of the field. Arkansas began that tournament ranked 33rd in the country. The John Brown University men's soccer team plays tonight in Siloam Springs. They'll host Central Baptist in an attempt to improve on the team's 1-3 record. The JBU women's team next plays Friday afternoon at Ouachita Baptist in Arkadelphia. Arkansas soccer team will open SEC action this weekend at home. The Razorbacks host Mississippi State Friday night, beginning at 7 at Razorback Field. Arkansas, by the way, will also be home Sunday afternoon, playing non-conference opponent Oral Roberts. Razorbacks are 4-4 so far in 2017. One of the losses, a 4-2 setback against number one Penn State. Arkansas's SEC football opener against Texas A&M at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas on September 23rd now has a kickoff time. 11 a.m. that Saturday morning. It will be shown on ESPN. These announcements came from the Southeastern Conference office yesterday. The showdown will be the fourth time in five seasons that Arkansas has opened SEC action with Texas A&M. Razorbacks enter the game with a 1-1 record. Not playing this week. Arkansas, by the way, this is some good news for Razorback fans, has won its last three games that came after an off week, defeating Florida in 2016, Auburn in 2015, and LSU 2014.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2017 Hillbury Music Festival, October 12th through the 15th, on the farm in Eureka Springs. This four-day camping, Bluegrass Music Fest will present national touring acts, local artists, food vendors, workshops, and more. Winners announced September 29th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Register and find information at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Catherine Sherrills, our militant grammarian, is with me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome back.
Thank you. Kyle, I've been slowly wading through all the papers from my campus office that I've hauled home. Now that I'm retired, I have time to see what I've collected over 25 years of teaching. Yeah, it's many, many boxes. Today, I brought along something I know you're just going to love.
Excellent.
It's headlined, Supplementary Exercise, Sit, Set, and Lie, Lay.
You have a weird, weird idea of what I love.
I don't think there's anybody who likes these.
All right.
So here, let's review. Set and lay are the transitive forms of the verbs. They both require a direct object.
Right.
In other words, if you have to have something to set down, you have to have something to set, right?
Right.
Or lay down. You can say, I'm going to lay down my body. It's kind of a weird thing
right.
to say, but I used to explain it. You got to have arms to do those things, to
right.
set things, to lay things. Sit and lie are the intransitive forms. They don't need objects. Sometimes they're followed by modifying phrases and clauses, but those are not objects.
All right.
Clear as mud?
No.
Okay, let's give it a shot. All right. George Washington once sat in that chair.
He sat in that chair.
That's right. And in that chair is not an object, it's a prepositional phrase. So you can have words after the intransitive, but they're
right.
not objects. Where do you want to set or sit down?
Where do you want to sit, S-I-T.
Right. Mm-hmm. Set or sit that box down here.
Sat with an E, set that.
Set,
yeah.
Set with an E, yes. Part of the stage couldn't be seen from where we were
sitting.
Sitting. Very good. Those books have sat on my desk since I entered school.
They have sat.
He's going by my expression.
All right. Someone put them there.
So someone set them there.
Set,
but
right.
Once they set them there.
They sat. All right.
So not only we can be at rest and reclining with sit and lie, but also objects can.
Set those books on my desk.
And
sat there until you picked them up again.
That's right. Mm. Okay, so we're picking up where we left off last week with the remainder of the Emporia State University tips on how to proofread.
Yeah, you gave us last week, check for spelling, sentence fragments, and agreements, things like that.
Sentence structure kind of things, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, next on the list is subject-verb agreement, which we talked about a few weeks ago. But there are many, many ways to write a sentence without making it agree, so let's look at some of those. It occurs when a writer does not use the correct verb form for the subject. To correct the error, first determine whether the subject is singular or plural. So you're looking for subject and verb agreements. You should do it this way. Use a highlighter to mark every working verb in the essay. Draw errors from the verbs to their subject. Excuse me. Check each subject and mark it plural or singular. And then, this is a terrific a little tip they gave, and I'm going to let you apply it here.
Okay.
One way to test the verb for correctness is to substitute a third person pronoun, it, she, he, or they. He, she for the singular subjects and they for the plural subjects. And then say the verb aloud. So let's try this. Here's the sentence. Right. The editor of the weeklies want to hire the student who scores the highest on the editing test. So what are the two working verbs here? What's the subject of want? The editor of the weeklies want.
The editor.
Editor.
Is the subject,
editor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And substitute a third-person pronoun for that word, editor.
She.
She. All right, and then check the verb. She
wants.
Wants.
The sentence had want, but that's incorrect.
And why do you think the sentence had wants?
Because weeklies was the word closest to want. The editor of the weeklies, mm-hmm. which is plural, but that's not what you're trying to
agree with. That's right, because weeklies is the object of the preposition.
So it can never be the subject.
That's right.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
You're learning my mantra. Okay, so the second part of the sentence was, who scores the highest on the editing test? What's the subject of scores?
The student. No. Who scores the highest?
This is a tough one. People don't know this.
All right, so the phrase we're talking about is, who scores the highest on the editing test?
Now,
scores is the
verb. That's right.
Who?
That's right.
Who?
Who is, what kind of word is who, do you know?
Who is a,
A lot of people don't know. It's a relative pronoun.
It's a relative pronoun.
And like other pronouns, mm-hmm. it can be the subject of a clause.
Okay.
So who is the subject?
Right.
Now substitute who with one of those ones we know. Okay. He scores or score?
He scores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So in this case, who scores the highest is correct.
That's right. That's right. So part of the sentence was correct and part was not. Yeah. And it works pretty well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I like little tips like that. There's a great one for whom. I think we've talked about it before.
Yes, we have.
Generally, I mean, if you're talking about bodies, it's almost always going to be sit and sat, right? Unless we're talking about arms, because arms and hands can set things down.
Right.
And grammatically, if what follows the word is there's action put on that thing, then it's going to be set.
Right.
All right.
Set is the easier of these two.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Here we go.
And the reason that lie and lay are so difficult is that lay... is easy. It's laid. I lay the book on the table every day when I come in. I laid the book on the table yesterday. I have laid the book on that table every day for a year.
There you go.
All right. Whereas lie is I lie in the hammock dreaming of Paris.
Right.
Yesterday, I lay, L-A-Y, which is the same as the present tense of the transitive. So that's real confusing.
Yes, it is.
And then there's that one that hardly anybody knows. I have lain in the hammock.
L-A-I-N.
L-A-I-N.
Okay.
Yeah. And, of course, we tend to say laid for both of those things.
Right.
Okay. All right. The map shows all the land lying or laying to the north of our town.
Lying.
Lying.
Yes.
But it, I guess God put it there.
Yes.
But anyway, it's
yes.
still lying. It's,
right.
it's at rest, right?
Right.
Where can I have lain or laid my watch last night?
Laid.
Mm-hmm. Because you got to use your hands to
right.
put it down, right?
Right.
Let the equipment lay or lie there until we're ready to use it.
Lie.
Lie, because somebody has put it there.
Right.
How long have these records been laying or lying here?
Lying.
Very good.
Yeah.
And there's one where we'll say laying every time.
Every time.
Mm-hmm. The campsite you're looking for lays or lies east of here?
It lies east
mm-hmm.
of here.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting that most of these are intransitive. At the end of the holiday, we lay or laid the Christmas ornaments away for another year.
Lay. Wait. What are the choices?
I can't hear what you're saying. Well,
say it again. I'm sorry.
All right, sure. At the end of the holiday, we lay, L-A-Y,
mm-hmm.
or laid, L-A-I-D, the Christmas ornaments away for another year.
Lay.
How are you spelling it?
L-A-Y.
No.
Because you're
laid.
Doing that with your arms.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's see. Is it past tense? Oh, it could be present tense or past tense.
Right.
It could be either.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
good. That's good.
I'm going to give myself credit for that
You
one.
Should. At the end of the holiday, every year,
mm-hmm.
right, we lay past tense.
Right.
Oh, no.
No.
Mm-mm, because the past tense of lay is
right.
laid.
Right.
Yeah.
So do I not get credit for that one?
Well, no, wait a minute. No, you're right. No, we're going to give you credit.
Okay.
Because it still, to express something that we do every year.
Right.
We lay these here every year. We
right.
hang this on the door every year.
Yeah.
We lay the ornaments in the box every
yeah.
year. Okay.
Yeah.
That is to put the ornaments in the box.
Right.
Or it could just as easily mean at the end of this year's holiday,
mm-hmm.
we past tense laid the Christmas ornaments away for another year.
Or you could just tell people you placed them in the boxes and avoid all of this. All right. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Sherlds.
Somewhere to go, but won't you make yourself at home and stay with me? And don't you ever leave. Lay down, Sally, and rest here in my arms. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? Lay down, Sally, no need to leave so soon.
Okay, I'm going to give you a list of 5 items you can encounter throughout the region this weekend. 3 of them, when you encounter them, will be edible. In no particular order, the list includes pancakes, bicycles, polo horses, pesto, and squirrels. And if you were paying close attention, you knew that after polo horses, probably the next 2 would be edible. So yes, edible squirrel later this week. First, the pancakes. A pancake breakfast fundraiser to benefit the Gear Hogs robotics team is Saturday morning from 7 to 10 at Parsons Stadium in Springdale. You can find out more at the Facebook page for Gear Hogs 3612. Gear Hogs 3612. Bentonville Parks and Recreation will host the Fall Square to Square Bicycle Ride Saturday. It's from 8 until 3. It's for all ages and for all bicycling abilities. You do have to register in advance. You will receive a t-shirt, a water bottle, and a finisher medal. For more information, bikebentonville.com. Tricycle Farms invites you to the 6th annual Pesto Fest, September 16th from 5 to 10 p.m. in Fayetteville. It will feature prizes for the best pesto. It will also have local music, children's activities, a raffle, and much more. Tricyclefarms.org for more information.
Lifestyles Incorporated will be hosting its biggest annual fundraising event, Polo in the Ozarks, Saturday at the Buell Farm. That takes place near Goshen. Polo in the Ozarks has, well, a live polo match, of course. There are activities specifically for children. There's tailgating. There's silent auctions. There are live auctions, a gala dinner. There's live music. You can find out more for Polo in the Ozarks at polointheozarks.com. Also, a phone number, 521-3581. Now for the squirrels. Bentonville's annual World Champion Squirrel Cook-Off is Saturday, all day at the 8th Street Market. It's south of the square. It is free, and there will be treats, goods from a variety of vendors. There will be live music and, of course, gourmet squirrel concoctions. If you want to enter a team or just find out more, squirrelcookoff.com or look on Facebook.
On Friday, NASA's Cassini spacecraft will plunge into Saturn's atmosphere and disintegrate. The scientists who've worked on it have mixed emotions.
I've gone through all the stages of mourning, all the stages of grief.
It's going to be a sad day. It's going to be a sad day.
But it's a very proud moment, too.
I'm Ari Shapiro. That story plus the impact of Hurricane Irma this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Blue Eye. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending part of your Tuesday with us. Back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of the Daily Ozarks at Large. Don't forget, if you miss any programs, you can go to KUAF.com, OzarksAtLarge.com, and many, if not all, but many of our best features and interviews also can be heard Sunday morning on Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9. We'll end today's show with music from Barrett Baber. He has his latest CD out. It's called A Room Full of Fighters, and he'll be coming to Eureka Springs next month, October 21st. He'll be at the Basin Park. That is October 21st. We're going to end with this song, Train Tracks. Thanks so much for spending part of your day with us.
Football stories about Friday night lights, when the boys from the next town stop by for a fight. We'll send them running, oh, out into the night, out at Train Tracks. Past the levee, the old cowboy, rusted up Chevys and beat up cars, learning about life and who they are. But tomorrow they're leaving and they're never coming back. Tonight they're gonna party at the Train Tracks. Train, you know time don't stop. They're gonna spend the next 10 years trying to make it to the top, just so they can daydream about going back to a party in the train tracks. Yeah, past the levee, the old cowboy, rusted up Chevys and beat up cars. Gonna party at the train.